Though the winter air outside was warmer than anything I had been accustomed to in the Appalachian Mountains. So maybe it wasn't the cold that made me quiver. I heard the water come on, and Iotis's inhale, shocked at the cold. I sat in my usual place on the clay floor, crossed my knees, adjusted the shift to cover everything important, and leaned back against the split log seat behind me. The seat was hand-carved for the elders, or the injured, to use when floor seating wasn't practical. The coals in the pit before me threw back heat, glowing red and cracking apart, and the rocks lining it in a circle were hot to the touch. I had been here often enough that I slipped easily into a meditative state. A memory came back to me, warm and soothing, of Aggie's soft voice speaking about circles. At some point in a previous ceremony, when I was relaxed on one of her concoctions and in a deeply meditative state, Aggie had told me the purpose of the rock and fire. In my memory, I heard her say, "Rocks in a circle are ceremonial, part of the four directions, the cords of life, and the universal circle. The fire center leads Tsalagi in accord with the Great One, into harmony with nature, and into harmony of relationships with each other. It also leads to healing of self, mentally, physically, and spiritually." I didn't understand what any of that meant, but this fire had burned a long time. I figured Aggie had taken someone to sweat during the night. I didn't like it when she took two sessions back to back, especially since some sessions, unlike my own, lasted days. Aggie looked and acted young, but deadly dehydration was a real possibility in a woman her age. If I said that, she'd likely thunk me over the head with something. Iotis opened the low sweat house door, and like me, he had to duck his head to enter. He moved like a cat in the dark of the windowless space. Iotis wasn't wearing a shift. He was wearing a loincloth, one that was clearly his own. Memories hit me fast. Edola, Tsalagi for my father, wearing a loincloth, his legs, hips, and outer buttocks bare in the traditional Cherokee style, his loincloth damp, his body muscled, long and lean, striding cat-like through the cold water of a splashing stream, his feet in moccasins, his calves wrapped in tall cloth and deer hide sleeves to his knees as protection from sharp rocks. He had been bending and lifting stone, building a rock whir to trap fish. I remembered Edola in his loincloth as he pulled in a net full of fish, looking back at me and laughing, white teeth shining. Edola, cleaning fish with the steel knife he had traded for with the Unega. Edola, dipping a bucket into the stream to gather water. Edola, my father, a vigorous man. And then my last memory of Edola. Dead on the floor of the cabin, his blood cooling, congealing in the weave of the cloth of his shirt as I dipped my hand into it. The slick swipe of blood as I wiped it across my face, giving his killer a blood vow of vengeance, staring into the man's blue eyes. That single moment of promise had set my entire life into motion, every decision since, every thought, every drop of blood spilled. Every death. I had been 5 years old. A child full of hate and anger and willing to die so long as I took my enemies with me. The visions were intense, vivid, shocking as the cold water of the spigot. The loincloth Edola wore when working in the creek water had been a brightly colored woven belt tied high on his waist and passed through his legs covering the center part of his buttocks, with a small square skirt hanging from the belt in front. So much like the one Iotis wore. The same colors in the belt. The red and yellow and blue woven into a long narrow length, wrapped and tied just so, that left the body bare and unencumbered for work or sweat. But Aya's skirt was fringed and tasseled, and a similar small skirt hung in back. Not as traditional as Adota's. Why the difference? Iotis sat a third of the circle away, his eyes on the fire pit. Like me, he had braided his long hair, and it hung over his shoulder, wet and dripping on the clay of the floor. His chest was still dripping from the shower, water beaded and reflecting the fire. A leather medicine bag hung around his neck on a leather thong, black on one side, green on the other, stuffed full of his spirit guide items. The bag was so familiar to the one I wore in my visions of my soul home that I looked away. I had no medicine bag. Nothing marked the herbs and stones and bones of my passage through life. I had no medicine bag because I had no family. No history with the people. Jealousy spiked through me so strong that my chest ached and my breath came fast. Jane and Beast are family. She sent me a vision of Kits almost 2 years old, hunting together in a small pack. Not pack hunters. Family, she insisted. Tears filled my eyes. Yeah, I guess we are. Iotis and I didn't speak. A pile of split cedar logs were to the far side near where Aggie usually sat. A basket filled with bundles of fresh and dried herbs was nearby. A pitcher of water sat among the heated rocks. The clay formed, worked, dried and fire-cooked in the ancient Cherokee tradition. A water bucket with a ladle sat in the shadows near a roll of cloth strips and a shallow clay bowl. A narrow lap drum with a small hide-covered drumstick were next to Aggie's old boombox. Outside, the water came on and went off again. Aggie entered and walked to the east wall, where she lifted a 5-foot-long pole and used the tip to open a small wooden slot door, up high in the small gable. I realized that there were a series of tiny slot doors there, and I had never seen them. She sat across from us, crossing her knees as I had. Moving slowly, she added a single split log to the coals and the fire flared up for a moment as the flames teased across the dry wood. Light and shadows danced on the wood walls. Cedar scent filled the sweat house, and thin smoke hung near the ceiling. The heat built as we sat in silence and sweated. Time passed, but it had little meaning here in this place. Sweat slid and pooled and dripped. The fire burned lower, hotter. Aggie added split oak. Much later, another. My mind moved deeper into the slow, meditative state of ceremony, my eyes heavy. Aggie shifted her body slightly upright, the rustle of fabric and her indrawn breath telling me she was ready to begin. She raised one hand, palm up, over her head and slipped into the cadence of the Tsalagi elder and healer speaking English. She said, "Not what I expected. We are grateful to the Great One." Her open palm moved in front of her. "To the east." Her hand moved. "To the south." Her hand moved. "To the west." Her hand moved again, making a circle. "To the north." Her hand returned overhead, finishing the circle. Still holding the hand high, but where we could see it, she cupped her other palm beside the first as if pouring something into it. She leaned over the fire and dropped a few sprinkles of wild tobacco into the flame. It brightened in bits before vanishing. Reaching behind her, Aggie pulled a cloth-covered bundle out of the shadows and positioned it beside her without untying and revealing it. "Wado," she said softly. "You are here for counsel, for meditation." She looked back and forth between us, and recognition filled her eyes, a peculiar expectation. "We will begin. I am Egini, a Gayalgei, Aggie One Feather. My mother is Aniwaya, Wolf Clan, Eastern Cherokee, and my father was Ani Godigewi, Wild Potato Clan, Western Cherokee. My great-grandfather was Panther Clan.
I am Ayatis, Nagitsali,
Ayatis Firewind.
My mother was Ani Sahoni, Blue Holly Clan. My father was adopted into Panther Clan, part of Blue Holly Clan, when he married my mother and moved into her home.
I said, I am Jane Yellowrock, rogue vampire killer. I am also Dalonigei Digadoli, Yellowrock Golden Eyes. Panther Clan, I think, but I've been gone too long. I stopped sharply. When I spoke again, the words that came from my mouth were, I am an orphan of time and place. I have no Tsalagi clan, not really. Not anymore. Ayata shot me a look that might have meant most anything, a look that an elder might have given me. And I realized that he was nearly as old as me. But he had 170-some years of memories, and I had less than 33 years of memories. I looked away from him. Aggie watched my face and seemed satisfied with whatever she saw taking place there. She said, I will tell you of the world, through the bear and the deer. The bear, who is the body of the universe, lives its life eating and defecating and sleeping as comes naturally, with no cares for any other being, except for the messages recorded in the cells of his body. My head came up. That sounded a lot like the snake in the center of all creatures. Skinwalker wisdom and knowledge, mixed with instinct. These messages tell him what to do and when. All the messages and memories of time are recorded there, in the body of the bear. And the bear listens. Time. Time is recorded in the cells. Beast crept close to the center of my mind listening. My palms tightened on my knees, and I had to force my body to relax, had to force myself to breathe slowly and to listen with all of me, and not just my ears. And I realized that to listen with all of me was to listen in the Tsalagi way. The deer is the mind of the universe. The deer is sacred, Aggie said. A cunning animal. It sees and hears all things, and we can talk to the deer. The deer listens to the messages of the mind of the universe, as well as to the body of the universe. She looked to Ionis. Have you conditioned your body to listen to the messages of the universe, of the Great One, to receive knowledge and wisdom, as the sacred deer does for mental healing? I have traveled far, and listened to the deer, and to the bear, and to the jaguar, to the wolf and the mountain lion. I have listened, and sometimes the universe, the Great One, has spoken to me. And have you followed the wisdom of the visions?
Ayatis hesitated. Not always, Lisi. I have been stubborn. I have thought my way was the better way. I have feared to follow the path before me. I have looked to the past. I have held on to the past and to those I have lost. I have been a child in the face of Grandfather Rock many times. But now I wish to learn, to see the right and healing way again.
Aggie looked at me. Your past was lost to you. Will you be deer or bear?
Deer is prey, Beast thought. Bear is too big to be prey. Bear can kill big cat.
Beast padded closer to the forefront of my mind.
Beast would be big cat, faster big cat, big cat with sharper killing teeth and stronger claws. But Beast will not be deer or bear. Jane will not be deer or bear.
I shook my head and pulled on the most formal speech I could manage. Words and phrases and mannerisms I had learned in the children's home. But more importantly, words and phrases and mannerisms I had learned in Leo's household. Grandmother, there is wisdom in both ways. The way of the mind of the universe and also the way of the body of the universe. Because the body has time stored in its cells, I thought. Body and mind should be, no, they are, together, one thing, One power, one energy. As even the foolish white man now knows, E equals MC squared. Aggie nodded slowly, hearing my words and the feelings that lay beneath. I said, I would choose the wisdom and the messages of the cells and the wisdom and the messages of the universe, the mind and the body combined, the wisdom and messages in both together. I would serve my family and my clan and my tribe by leading them into war if peace was not possible, by bringing them meat to eat, including the deer and the bear, by sharing what wisdom there exists in my cells and what wisdom God would reveal to me, and that I understood. But I think I would not give my body to be eaten as a way of service. I would not choose to become prey. I am not prey. Beast is not prey. Right, I thought. We are not prey. Aggie seemed satisfied and disturbed at my answer in equal measure, and uncertain which one to address. But finally she nodded again, as if accepting what cannot be changed. She reached into the basket, took out a fresh pine bough, and placed it on the fire. The stink of blazing pine filled the air.
We come for healing, for the right way, for reconciliation.
Aggie looked back and forth between us and said,
How may I help?
Iota said nothing, so I did. Maintaining a formal tone, I said, This man came to my house. He tried to kill me. Then he says he's my brother and a skinwalker and wants me to use my connections for an introduction to Leo Pelissier. Iotis recoiled, the skin of his back cringing when I spoke his secret. But Aggie knew all my secrets, and no way was I keeping Iotis's. Aggie frowned.
This is a twisted path we walk, with many byways to tread. First, Iotis, are you Jane's brother, part of her family and clan?
Yes, I believe so.
Jane, do you believe him to be your brother?
I didn't want to reply, and I may have sounded sulky when I answered. I have a partial memory of my father talking about a baby I was supposed to take care of, and the master of the city says that beneath the skinwalker scent he smells like my full brother.
For now, we agree that you are blood kin.
Reluctantly, I nodded.
Iotis Firewind. You tried to kill your sister.
She did not wear the scent of Tsalagi, but of predator, of magic not associated with my people. I reacted on instinct. I ask forgiveness.
Forgiveness is a difficult thing.
Aggie looked at me.
Would your Redeemer God forgive his brother?
I scowled at her. I didn't kill him when I had the chance. I helped him in his request to see Leo Pelissier. I can forgive an instinct and a reaction to magic. Aggie nodded slowly, considering.
Yet your anger and distrust persists.
Yeah. He's known about me for some time and decided not to come visit until he could combine business and meeting me. Coming now is awfully convenient. Maybe that's some of that wisdom he says he ignored. I don't know. But his explanation lacked full disclosure, and his apology, if there was one, was inadequate. And it may be petty, but his loincloth has a skirt in back. It's not traditional, and that bothers me. She ignored my last complaint.
By not making the trip to see you, and you alone, Iotis offered insult to your relationship, which is more painful to you than your brother trying to kill you.
Which made me sound the next best thing to Psycho, and Iotis scornfully rude. Iotis frowned at Aggie and then at me. Eli and I had said much the same thing, and Iotis had thought nothing about it. Let a tribal elder say something, and he listens.
Do his words and stories have the ring of truth? Aggie asked me.
I frowned back at Iotis. He tells just enough to make any lie sound like the truth. He's a cop. They're professional liars.
You were in love with a cop,
Iotis said. and he was a liar. Aggie raised her hand to stop me before I could continue what already sounded like a childish squabble.
Iotis, how do you respond?
My wife was a white woman with red hair. We lived among the tribes of the West for some years. Things in my life changed because of that. I acquired new concepts, stories, and wisdom from the Paiute and the Navajo and the Apache. The extra skirt and covering made my wife happy. She was a woman of her time, and she didn't like the nakedness of the savage. I meant no disrespect to my sister. This woman does not smell like skinwalker or clan. She smells like predator. Yet, this woman is my sister.
Aggie nodded. She knew why I smelled like I did.
Do you agree that she speaks the truth about your insult to her? That you should have, and yet did not, come to greet her sooner?
Iotis's face went cold and unyielding, the look of a hunter facing danger. If I'd been Aggie, I'd have been squirming. Aggie simply sat there and waited. And waited. Sweat became slick trails moving slow down my spine, between my bent knees, down my chest, across my scalp, and down my face. I blinked to keep it out of my eyes, but it stung, salty sharp. Iotis took a breath and blew it out, and when he spoke, it was with the same measured formality that Aggie was using.
She speaks the truth. I put off coming. I didn't know what to say or how to say it. I heard the messages of the universe, of Grandfather Rock, and the candor of the deer, and I did not listen with my whole self. I turned away. I have been a child in my thoughts to run away from truth and wisdom, ignoring or following the elder's wisdom and the Great One's messages as I chose, seeking my own way.
This was a Tsalagi way of speaking, and the people do not lie, even to the white man, never to an elder. This was truth.
I combined the trip with business in the white man way. I didn't treat the relationship with honor. My apology was not heartfelt because I justified my actions.
His words made me feel better, though in his place, I'd have just barged ahead, driven to Nola, and banged on his door, letting the chips fall where they might. Maybe his way was better. Or maybe his way was cowardly. Or maybe a combo of the two. Aggie said gently,
"You have both violated relationship. You have strayed from a good medicine path and dishonored one another."
I frowned at the floor, letting her words try to make sense inside me. Among tribal peoples, medicine wasn't drugs. It was a method of right relationships, spiritual, mental, physical, and with the natural world, in terms of nature, the earth, tribe, clan, and family. I wasn't sure how I had violated anything, but I sure could see how my bro had violated it all.
Jane, your Unilisi violated the path to harmony when she led you to kill your father's murderers.
Iotis whipped his eyes to me. Yeah, I had told her, so what? I ignored him. Aggie went on.
You were too young to understand the way of the war woman. Her teaching led you to believe that violence and death was the answer to all things.
I opened my mouth to argue and just as quickly snapped it shut, feeling the sweat in the creases around my mouth, tasting salt and smoke. Aggie was right. I frowned harder, not wanting to agree. But I had entered the sweat house in honor, which meant I had no choice but to be led to reconciliation. I should have just shot Iotis and been done with it, dang it.
Yes, Lisi. If Iotis is to be believed, I continued in the way I was taught. I violated the path of harmony when I tried to kill a white man rapist on the Trail of Tears. I frowned harder, as an image came to me of a pale face, dark with white man beard, lined and saggy, too thin. The knife in my hand as I stabbed him with it. The vision of his fist coming at me. Then nothing. He was Unaga. He hurt a woman, I thought,
I thought that meant he deserved to die at my hand.
You were a child, led down a path that was for a grown woman. You are now that woman, standing on a bridge over a roaring river, where you can see upstream to your past, down to your present, and downstream to your future.
I nodded, but instead of seeing a river, I saw a path through a dark wood, one running with blood, and with the bloody, muddy footprints of the passage of my life, my past. I looked the other way and saw a short, rock-strewn path mostly hidden in a rainstorm, lightning jagged through the sky. Thunder boomed. Rain beat the earth like a timpani of drums. The path leading into the future quickly vanished into the mist of pounding rain and lashing trees. Rain and lightning and time. I blinked my eyes open, surprised that they had shut. My past is a path that runs with blood, I said, still speaking in a formal tone.
Yes, Aggie said gently. And in your present, you work for Europeans, for white men, white bloodsuckers. You take their money and kill when they say to kill. Your present is a river running with blood. Your future is unknown, and you may take it in any direction. The same bloody path you now tread. Or something else. Something different. Something that is not dependent on the grandmother who taught you to kill.
I wiped the stinging sweat from my eyes. I'd thought pretty much the same thing myself. After a little too long, I blew out a breath and said, Yes, Lisi, I have taken a blood path. I am mired in it. My feet stand still, unmoving, not walking, submerged in the blood of my enemies and the enemies of the vampires. I looked into Aggie's dark eyes, eyes that saw too much, ignoring my brother's yellow ones. When I spoke the next words aloud, where my brother could hear them, I gave away much of what made me tick. But this sweat was sacred, almost holy, and it seemed the time to share my own heart. I took this path to protect my godchildren, whom I have sworn to keep safe, to protect all the witch children in the Americas. Perhaps there was a better path, one that would have accomplished the same ends without so much death. I dropped the formal tones and speech patterns. I don't see it, Aggie. I don't see any other way I could have gone, except through the heads and hearts and blood of my enemies. Aggie nodded thoughtfully, and passed us pottery cups filled with cool water, smelling of mint.
Drink, she said. You have taken a path through blood and death. Have you done so with honor? Have you been kind and compassionate for the lives of your enemies? Have you given back to the earth for the blood you shed? Have you treated all of nature with honor in all of your ways? Have you taken a path with respect for the earth?
Mostly. Life of the living, human life, yes, mostly. Life of the undead, not so much.
Why should your brother, who knows only what he reads in his reports, trust one who deals in death? He does not know for a surety that you killed to protect the innocent. He does not know that you have not killed simply because the vampire requested a killing.
Crap. To kill or not to kill? That is the question. And that was the crux of the whole of my life. I closed my eyes and salt stung them. A time passed, marked only by the sweat that ran off my body. I looked again at the vision of my future, as it disappeared in rabbit trails through the rain and forest, in the fall of rain time, and the life of the earth. I said, agreeing, the path I walk is not the only one through the forest. I may have been set on this path by the grandmother who should have taught me differently, but now I am grown. I can see clearly how the path of my future might alter. And there was that bear and deer story. Holy crap. I could see the future through the messages of the body and also through time. I have the right to choose how I should go forward. The path is mine to make. I looked at Iotis. He was sitting with his eyes closed, sweat streaking his body. His nose was shaped exactly like mine. His eyebrows exactly like mine. His irises were yellow, exactly like mine. That was the recognition sparking in Aggie when she first entered the sweat house. She had seen the resemblance. I said softly, I would make peace with my brother. If Iotis heard me, he didn't give anything away. He might have been asleep for all the reaction he gave.
Iotis, Aggie said, you knew of Jane Yellowrock. You knew she was likely your sister, yet you chose not to come.
Gently, her words slow and kind, Aggie said,
your path was one of jealousy and insult.
Iotis's mouth tightened.
Your path was based upon the tales and stories you heard as a child. The big sister who killed her enemies, who went to war when just a child. You could not live up to her. You did not believe that you could walk her path. And so, you avoided her until you had need of her. Until you might use her as a weapon. Just as did the grandmother who taught her to kill. This was your insult.
The silence stretched out, tight as a drumhead. Aggie placed a pine bough on the fire. It caught, smoked, and blackened in the flames until its core glowed red and it fell apart. My stomach growled. We drank more water. I had to answer the call of nature. We all slipped into the cold and came back. We drank again. More time passed. Iotis sighed, long and low, lifted his head and looked at Aggie.
Yes, Lisi. In my heart I still harbored the childish jealousy of my youth.
He turned his eyes to me, and this time I saw Iotis Firewind, the man he was in this moment, and hints of the man he might someday become deep in his eyes.
I am sorry, my sister. Sorry that I treated you with disrespect. Sorry that I did not show you the great value you hold in our clan. I am ashamed that I didn't honor the Great One and the gifts of this life by coming to you the moment you were revealed to me. Your stories are still told around the fires of the old ones. But I never told your stories. I never shared them. I was weak and foolish. And I did not put away foolish things when I became a man.
He took a slow breath.
I ran away from all the childhood things that challenged me in my youth. All the skills and stories and dance and ceremony that I was not successful at. All the things that were hard. And though I have been successful in all the things I have done as a man, I have never stopped running. I have never looked back and made the things of my childhood right.
Aggie dropped her chin, indicating that she was satisfied and that we could move ahead with the meditation ceremony. From the basket, she took a small mortar and pestle, stripped some wilted herb leaves off a stem, added some dried leaves, and ground it all together. She took two wooden cups and put half of the herb mix in each and poured heated water into them. She set the decoctions aside to steep and settled herself as the elders always did, a relaxing of the facial muscles and shoulders, knees and hips, though her back was still tall and straight. Aggie's eyes were sunken. Her skin was wrinkled and desiccated from sweating. Salt crystals were white in her hairline, brightening the few silver strands interwoven in the long bob that had grown out to hang at her shoulders. Her eyes were black, skin olive and copper. Zalagi. The sight of her and Iotis together spoke of home, of the home I had lost when I was 5. Something washed through me, a flash flood of ice and fire, a fury, a torrent that left behind only emptiness. The deluge of emotion was accompanied by an echo of wailing and grief, a sound I remembered, not a sound of imagination. It was a howling, weeping cry from my childhood. The sound of my mother and the other women wailing over the body of my father the night he was killed and my mother was raped. This memory was an inundation, longing in loneliness and the resonance of the grave. I sucked in a smoke-filled breath, blinked, and the memory was gone. But I could find it again, would find it again, this memory of my past. My path from the past to the present and into the future had begun with the wailing of grief. I reached back and ran my hands along my braid. It was both wet and stiff with salt. We had been here longer than I realized. Aggie set three lengths of sage on the coals. The leaves curled and the smell rose on the air, crisp and earthy. Iotis, his face impassive, watched every move Aggie made. I had no idea what he was feeling, and that bothered me. Not being sure why I was bothered me even more. Chapter 12. He asked me to have a three-way with Leo. The smell of flaming sage rose on the smoke. Aggie handed us each a cup. Drink, then we will find a path through the things that you seek. Iotis drained his cup and said, I came for counsel about my sister, who is remembered in our clan, who was mourned. For all my life I heard about Dalunigei Idigadoli, Yellow Rock Golden Eyes, the sister who killed the white men who murdered our father, who wore the blood of our father, the blood of her vow, until the two men were dead. She was 5 years old when she made her blood vow and carried it out. Dalunigei Idigadoli, who attacked a white man on the Trail of Tears and was banished into the snow in the form of Gahe, Bobcat. He looked at me. Dalunigei Digadoli, Golden Eyes. Our eyes are the gift of our heritage. Skinwalker eyes, I said. Unilisi of Panther Clan had eyes this color, though she may not have been a grandmother by blood and birth. Iotis nodded, agreeing. This was the woman who was grandmother to me as well. There was another woman like us, here in the city 100 years back or so, I said. She had golden eyes, too. And she smelled like you. Floral. Sweet. There was also one Utlunta. This was before I took the blood path that I walk today. Utlunta was stalking Aggie and her mother, and the bones of their ancestors buried out back. He was killing humans and vampires.
You killed it,
Iotis said.
This is good.
Time passed again. Aggie added a small split log to the fire and then ladled water from the bucket over the hot stones. Steam billowed and rose. Sweat gathered and ran across me, taking the toxins out of my flesh and opening my mind. Sweat ran across Aggie's face and darkened the fabric of her shift. Sweat ran across Iotis's bare upper body and down his legs. He sat cross-legged, eyes closed, waiting. Aggie paused and motioned for me to finish my drink. It was yucky, like heated pond water, but I knocked it back and swallowed, then spat a leaf out of my mouth into my palm and wiped it on my shift. Aggie smiled slightly at my ick expression and said, The first time I brought Jane here, I told her that blood chased after her, that blood rode her, that she pounced on her enemy, like a big cat onto prey. I told her this long before I knew her nature or her spirit, but even then I knew that she was not Kalanu Ailiski, the raven mocker who likes to steal hearts, nor was she liver-eater or spear-finger Hutlunta. She stopped. Aggie had also told me that I walked a fine line between light and darkness, and that I could fall into the evil of the skinwalkers. But she didn't say that to Iotis, Not yet. It wasn't kindness. Aggie wouldn't keep an important warning or potential problem hidden. Being kind wasn't the job of an elder. So when she continued, I wasn't surprised. I have heard it said. The skinwalkers shared the blood of the people. The liver eaters stole it. You both are skinwalkers, from the stories told by the oldest among us, from the time before the white man. You are protectors, warrior and warwoman. You are from among the skinwalkers who led Salagi into battle. But all skinwalkers walk the line between light and darkness. It would be better for you to walk that line together. Iotis looked at me from the corner of his eyes, and I could tell he didn't like that idea. So I stuck out my tongue at him. An eruption of laughter exploded from low in Iotis's belly, a clear and free tone of merriment, the laughter of a happy childhood. Aggie's eyebrows went up at my deliberate childishness and Iotis's response. My mouth curled up, and I sounded deliberately snarly when I said, "I never got the chance to do that when we were kids." Iotis's laughter fell away, and he tilted his head to study me. "I should have come to you right away." "Yeah, you should." "Why didn't you?" I asked. "I mean, really. The real reason." As if thinking, Iotis shook his head, his long braid slinging against him. "Aggie One Feather is right. I grew up with this tale of the 5-year-old war woman. The old women would sit around the fire in winter talking about her, telling family stories of my sister, who should have led her clan, who would have sat on the war councils with the chiefs and the elders and led her people to war." Aggie said gently, "You wanted to wait until your jealousy passed." Answering Aggie but still speaking to me, Iotis said, "I saw the YouTube video of you walking out of a mine entrance with a massive scar across your throat and a dead police officer slung over your shoulder, one you had tried to save. Your eyes were glowing gold. I knew you were that sister, that war woman's sister." He glanced to Aggie and back to me. "Yours were big shoes to follow when I was young. Until I found my way and my place in the world, and so I waited. I let things get in the way. I put that visit on the back burner. I ignored my heart's urging to come see you. I'm sorry. Really, very sorry." I blinked against the sweat that dripped down my face, again stinging my eyes. The room had lightened with the nearness of dawn. Pale gray light creeping through the small cracks of the building and along the roof system overhead. We had been here 24 hours. "How can you be my brother?" I asked, hearing the desperation in my voice, remembering standing with my father above a roaring river, remembering my promise to care for the expected child. After all this time, after all these years... He had said the words before, but ceremony required complete candor and understanding. "Our mother was pregnant with me when our father died. I was born on the Trail of Tears. The Great One has timing that doesn't always make sense to us." Aggie asked, "Jane, are you satisfied with Iotis's words?"
"Yes."
"Iotis, are you satisfied with Jane's words?" Iotis considered me. "Where were you all those years, sister?"
"I'm sure it's a long story, but I don't remember much of it." I pointed to my head. "Amnesia. The stories the newspapers told about me were real. I spent a lot of time in mountain lion form. I didn't mention Beast's soul inside with me. That was black magic, and I needed to know him better before I shared that. Since Aggie didn't volunteer that information, I figured she was okay with a delay. Stick around. I'll tell you my stories."
"I can't stay long enough to hear the tales of that many years," he said, his expression oddly kind,
an expression I might have seen in the eyes of the keepers of the secrets, the most elder of the Tsalagi, which he was.
But when I leave, I'll be going to Asheville. Hyalosti, six-man killer, has requested my presence. Maybe you should come with me.
Shock zinged through me like a pinball, an electric bruising. Hyalosti, six-man killer, was our grandmother. Maybe I will, if I live that long. Aggie said, "It is dawn. We will close with a blessing." She reached for the bundle at her side. I had forgotten it was there, and was surprised when she lifted a rock out of its folds. Or not a rock, but a huge, clear quartz crystal. There was a central spire with a multifaceted pointed top. Two smaller spikes were on one side. The three rose together from a base of smaller crystals and a curved bottom of stone. I tensed, eyes darting, searching for trapped arc-en-ciels. There was nothing, just the clear crystal. With both hands, Aggie pushed aside the fire-warmed river rock that was closest to her knees and placed the crystal in the depression. She held her cupped hands over the crystal and said, "Like the quartz, we are clear of strife, clear in mind, body, spirit, and natural space. Like this small piece of Grandfather Rock, we are part of Earth, safe in Earth, protecting Earth, and her plants and creatures. Great One, we offer thanks for what gifts we have, thanks to the four directions and the power of the universe." Her voice took on a chant cadence as the sweat house brightened still more. "I give thanks in a traditional prayer altered for Jane's spiritual path. To the spirit of the fire, who is the east. To the spirit of the earth, who is the south. To the spirit of the water, who is the west. To the spirit of the wind, who is the north. To the Redeemer, who forgives, whose path Jane follows, who Jane worships. We pray and we give thanks to you, Great One. We pray, we give thanks for Mother Earth. We pray, we give thanks for Father Sky, Grandfather Sun, and Grandmother Moon. For Jane's Redeemer, for all life, all gifts, all joy, all wisdom. And we pray that we may exist together in peace, with harmony, with balance in all our relations. Wado." As she spoke the last two words, the dawn sun passed through the small door in the eaves, the door Aggie had opened when she entered. The dawn light illuminated a path through the air, lightened the dust and residual smoke with its muted ray. A lighten on the crystal on the earth near Aggie's knees, brightening it, sending the dawn light out in a prism of color and a rainbow of hues. This was Aggie's version of the traditional blessing way. Not exactly something I remembered from the scant years of my childhood, but it was close enough. Iotis waited at the fire while Aggie and I showered in the frigid water, dressed, and walked to stand beside his car. Aggie stared at her house, looking as wilted as the herbs from the mediation ceremony.
"Will you ride with him, or do you need to call your brothers to pick you up?"
"I'll drive her home," Iotis called from behind the sweat house. "Skinwalker ears." Aggie smiled, nodded to me, and walked up the steps to her front door. She moved like an old, worn-out woman, exhausted by life. I had done that to her. I should go back and pour water on her fire pit and wood, use enough water, and she would have to let the pit dry out before she could work again. Iotis strode from behind the building, his eyes taking in the way I lounged against his car.
"Get in. I'll take you home," he said.
I opened the door and eased into his cop car, a gray four-door SUV. It smelled like Christmas trees and commercial cleansers and old cigarette smoke. The back was filled with cop gear, including one of the new psi meters, the kind that measured all sorts of magical energy.
It meet with your approval?
He asked, as he executed a 3-point turn in the street. I couldn't tell if he was being sarcastic or curious, so I just shrugged. He said,
I poured the bucket of water on the fire. It'll be at least a day before it dries up enough to take anyone to sweat.
She was tired, I agreed, finding it odd that we had been thinking along the same lines, but that Iotis had actually done something about it, while I had only thought about it. That stuff about our clan talking about me. You know it wasn't like that at all, right? He didn't respond. I mean, yes, I made a blood vow, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was 5.
Our stories tell of you running through the cornfields and through the woods to the clan longhouse and waking everyone, then climbing on the back of a horse, riding with Unilisi as she tracked the men, then waiting as she shifted to Tladotsi and trapped them and caught them, brought them to a cave on clan lands.
I blinked, remembering the power and speed of the racing horse beneath me, the smell of Unilisi's body, the smoke trapped in her clothes, the acrid smell of herbs, the sickly sweetness of old blood. The memory vanished as if I had popped a balloon with a pin. Later memories flashed in front of my mind like flipping the pages of a gruesome picture book. I watched our mother and grandmother torture and kill one of the men, and I killed the other one. Unilisi put the blade in my hand and pushed me at him. I wanted to do it. I wanted the white man to die. But it wasn't glory or honor. It was kidnapping and torture and murder. Aya nodded and made a turn, his blinker bright yellow.
Things were different back then. Society was different. More blindly, casually cruel. Despite what people call the conservative, fascist, racist, sexist world of today, people were worse in the past.
I shrugged. Perspective is everything, Aya. He grunted. It sounded like one of mine, and I realized I had used the shorter term, Aya. I stared into the drawn-in light. A few miles later, Iotis asked,
Are you going to tell me where the Sangre Duello is being held?
Asking as a cop or a brother?
Does it matter?
Yes.
Then I guess you won't be telling me anything.
Guess not.
What's the history between you and Rick LaFleur?
Oh, that was a zinger from out in left field. I could ignore the question, or I could answer it and see how he reacted. I turned in my seat, pulling one knee up to watch his face in the glow of the dashlights as I spoke. We were a thing. He was undercover and was seducing a were-leopard for info. He got bit. She got executed by a Grindelow. He got kidnapped by werewolves and tortured. I rescued him and killed the wolves. He turned, became a black were-leopard despite the amount of wolf saliva in his bites. We were still a thing, sorta. Then he was magically seduced by a were-leopard in heat in front of dozens of people. He left with her. I should have killed her or stopped him some other way. I didn't protect him. I let him go because my feelings were hurt and I was embarrassed. We were no longer a thing. It's uncomfortable and complicated. Aya nodded. I realized his hair was still braided, and it had left a wet trail down one side of his clothes.
When you killed the wolves,
he said,
it opened a chasm that has since been filled by the Bighorn Montana pack, with whom Leo has sworn an alliance.
I shrugged and said nothing.
Tell me about Rick and Kemnebi. Kemnebi attacked you.
Cop or brother?
Cop, ask him.
The slightest of smiles settled on his face.
This is awkward. If I had come before now, we would know one another, and I wouldn't have to be both brother and cop.
You screwed up.
Yes. And because I did, I now appear to be a top-tier jerk.
I didn't argue. I wasn't going to talk to him about Kem's demise or Rick's elevation in status, his wives, or Clan Yellow Rock. I was vamp careful when I answered. I'm the head of the local were-leopard clan.
You're not a werecat.
Nope. But problems arise and have to be solved.
Leap of leopards, Aya said. Not clan.
Leap? I like.
Anyway, Rick is now highly ranked in the Leap, so he can handle things any way he wants. If Rick loses control of his leopard, that could make for an awkward international incident.
Cop talking for sure.
And I don't care. Aya sighed. I don't know how to blend both the brother and the cop. I feel awkward and foolish and all my words are clumsy.
I noticed. A small smile accompanied my words.
Yes, well.
He drove in silence for a while, before he sighed.
I don't have time to build a relationship with you before the Sangre Duello.
You may never be able to build a relationship with me.
This is true, but I will try. Until then, I have a job to do.
Go for it.
As a part of that job, I have to find a way to be at the Sangre Duello.
I'm not in charge of Royal Vamp Protocol.
That's Leo's enforcer talking, not the sister.
Potato, potato. I have a job, too. Talk to Leo Secundo Air Gregoire when he gets in from Atlanta.
Blandly, Aya said, he's back from Atlanta, and I tried. He asked me to have a three-way with Leo.
I snorted. I didn't mean to. It just blasted out. My laugh felt vastly different in tone from Aya's. My laugh was stilted, sarcastic, stiff, as if I had never learned to laugh as a child, or had forgotten how 170 years ago. Still, the grin I gave him was bright and teasing, and at least it felt natural. Aya glanced at me and back to the street, his own lips turned up.
According to Adelaide Mooney, Gregoire is totally gaga over me, and I should consider myself caught in the crosshairs of an intense and concentrated seduction once the Sangre Duello is over.
You should be scared. Very, very scared.
I am not a homophobe,
he said, his lips curling higher. I knew that smile. It was mine, seen in the mirror.
The Cherokee Nation accepted same-sex marriage back in 2016. Among the speakers of Diné, the Navajo, the two-spirited are referred to as Nadle'ehe, or the transformed. The Lakota call the two-spirited the Winkete. To be two-spirited is a commonly accepted truth among a lot of tribes, the Mojave, Zuni, Omaha, Aleut, Kodiak, Zapotec, and Cheyenne all accept multiple forms of sexuality. But I'm straight, and even if I wasn't, there is no way in hell I'm doing a three-way with two vamps.
Chicken. He laughed, that amazing carefree laugh. The laugh I might have had except for two white men who killed my father and raped my pregnant mother, and then had the misfortune to fall into the clutches of a war woman skinwalker and her blood-vow-bound grandchild.
Yes,
he said.
I accept that judgment. Back to my job. They call you the Dark Queen. Want to tell me why?
That, I said, that was a cop move. And though I might have told my brother all about it, I'm not telling a cop. Figure it out on your own. And by the way, you must suck as an interviewer. I shook my head, disgusted. Rain spattered on the windshield, growing stronger. Lightning flickered in the distance. Silence settled on us. Uneasy, though not exactly troubled. We shared genes. No history. No common ground.
It seems I have no finesse when it comes to you, he admitted. But I have something for you. It's in the glove box, in a white bag.
I frowned at him. He got me a present. As if he read my mind, Aya said,
Unilisi, six-man killer, overnighted it to me.
My frown grew deeper, darker, and I stared at the glove box as if it might hold a water moccasin. When the box door didn't open all by itself and something venomous didn't slither out, I pulled the handle and spotted car rental papers in a brown paper-wrapped package. I studied the return address and the name Hyalasti, six-man killer, with a P.O. box number in Robbinsville, North Carolina. The box was light, but not empty. I tore the paper,
careful to keep the address whole and set the paper aside. The tape on the box broke easily with my fingernail, and I lifted the top off,